AI.org on the web. The previous program was Gary Noel Show, heard Monday through Friday at noon. It is now 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Hey, everybody. Yes, you are listening to The Positive Mind. This is not a mistake. You are on 99.5 in New York City with Ben Starr.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for tuning us up today. So keep that going. You know, our theme today is going to be sound. And tomorrow, today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about sound and its relationship to your mental health. We all know that, you know, sound can calm the beast. The beast inside of us, sound, music can calm the beast inside of us. Well, why don't we know more about sound and its effect on the central nervous system and consequently our brains, on our minds? We're going to be talking about that today and tomorrow with Nasima Diane Deamer in the studio.
Hi, how are you guys?
Nasima is a somatic experience practitioner, a practitioner here at the Positive Mind Center. What else do you know? You know,
I was originally a massage therapist,
right.
And I also do polarity therapy.
Polarity, that's
and
the
I've
one.
Been studying some work by Stephen Porges, which has become really important.
And trauma work in general.
Yeah, trauma therapy.
And your niece is here, who's done some research for us. Haley Victoria Deamer from Ohio is here.
Yes, hello.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. Did you find out a lot of information?
I did.
And did it make you happy?
Yes, it did.
You're glowing.
Love intellectual stimulation.
Yes. Yeah. You are a college student at Allegheny State College?
Allegheny.
Just Allegheny College.
Anyway, she did a lot of research for us about sound, the inner ear, and the effects of sound on your central nervous system and on your sense of well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question. Why do we use music in the middle of our show here at The Positive Mind? Why did Armand DeMille use music, do you think?
Oh, he was such a big supporter of music. And a
at the middle
himself,
of our show. And we've always had this great DJ, Ben Starr, tuning mm-hmm. up new music every time we're here. What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think music functions as the reset.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Especially in the middle. You know, music gives us a chance to collect ourselves and to reset and to just
pause.
Experience a respite, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the mind, I guess, you know, the mind, I think it was a brilliant idea of Armand's to have it there at the middle of the show. So I think it's great to have. And I didn't really know the reason, but you get so overloaded with information that you do need a reset button. Some people override that reset.
Mm-hmm.
And before long, they're anxious and tense and nervous and
upset.
Yeah,
they're just spacing out.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I really don't know what the last, you know, five sentences that person said was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it can
yeah, yeah.
be
so
really
I think,
intense.
Yeah, reset is the word. We think music can be a reset. And healing, nurturing, soothing music can really be a reset to your nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go right into it today.
Yeah.
Tell me why, Nasima. Why does sound and how does sound affect the nervous system and how can we use sound to improve our mental health?
Well, it's a complex topic and I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. We have talked in the past about the polyvagal theory and I'm not going to go quite into that. It's a theory, but it's being proven over and over again. But sound relates, you know, it's like we are always perceiving sound in our environment, even whether we know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Our system is very attuned to sound because sounds can indicate danger, especially, you know, when we were cavemen and cavewomen.
Okay.
We were always tuning for where's the predator. We don't want to get eaten alive.
Right.
So
and you know, animals in the wild do that now. You could see like the ears go up.
Mammals specifically have very acute hearing to detect threat sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it sort of works in our nervous system in a way that's subconscious. Like we're not always aware mm-hmm. that maybe there's a sound in our environment that is not a good sound. And especially if we're an anxious person, if we're a hyper-vigilant person because of our situation or because of our if we've had a traumatic upbringing, mm-hmm. we might be in the more hypervigilant, more on the sympathetic nervous system, the fight and flight aspect of our lives. And it just might be that we're under a lot of stress, too. Mm. When that happens, our nervous system changes the influence to our ears
mm-hmm.
so that our ears will be tuning for danger sounds instead of the sounds of vocal prosody of which is like the human voice,
uh-huh.
like a human voice that speaks melodically,
mm-hmm.
and also songs that are melodic
mm-hmm.
will help us down-regulate our nervous system.
See, I think for the future...
Because that's a sound of safety. But if we're really stressed out, we won't hear that sound.
I was going to say,
safety.
It sounds to me like a great diagnostic tool in the future of psychology that the psychotherapists and psychiatrists could use this to gauge the tension and the stress and the anxiety in an individual.
Yeah.
Just playing a series of sounds, different sounds, and seeing how the person responds to it. You said an important thing there
uh-huh.
that, you know, if you're raised in a stressful environment,
mm-hmm.
you become, you know, hypervigilant.
Yeah.
And then your nervous system is sort of high-wired
yeah.
that if you tune out the possibility even of receiving healing sound, that
yeah.
you are just on alert always for the negative sound. And I think one thing, like, if you want to get people's attention,
mm-hmm.
scratch your fingers on the wall or
oh
something,
my
you
gosh.
Know. I mean, there's a reason, like, that a bad sound really brings people to attention.
Yeah.
So you're saying an important thing here, and this is why we brought you in, because
mm-hmm.
we need to find out what it is that gets triggered in the – is it the ear? Is it the brain? Is it the inner ear?
Well
– what is polyvagal?
Well, okay.
take any
I'm
one of
kind of going in the back door of polyvagal.
Good.
So, you know, it's like if you're in sort of a high stress ear, if you're a high pitched person, you will not be able to hear things that will help you come down. So you'll always sort of be triggered. You're easily triggered. You can't put background noises into the background. Like everything's kind of in the foreground, and it's hard to distinguish one sound from another. That's one way that people can experience
right.
this. And that can be very confusing to the brain and the mind. Like, what do I need to respond to? And it might just be like, I'm, you know, on alert and everything is bad. And what's also interesting, it's like somebody could say something to me and I will mishear the intention of what they say. Like somebody could say, that's a really lovely blouse.
Mm-hmm.
But I could maybe hear, if I'm in this high tense thing, I'll hear, oh, that's a lovely blouse.
You hear it in a passive aggressive way.
You might hear, and it's like, and so you're like, so like everybody, and it's like that can feed into that loop of everybody's mean to me, nobody likes me. You know, it's like you're just mishearing, because part of what the middle ear does is it picks up emotional quality and cognitive, you know, your cognitive understanding of what's being said is directed by that middle ear. And I know I didn't get into sort of the structure of the
mid is
the structure of the middle ear, but that is controlled by the vagus nerve and the social engagement portion of the vagus nerve. So
social engagement.
Yeah.
So if you're under stress, if your system is totally under stress to mm-hmm. start with, and you're hearing negativity when it's really actually even positivity.
Yeah, potentially.
Potentially. Then it could all be related to your vagus nerve?
Well, it could shut down your vagus nerve and put you into fight and flight.
Hmm.
Yeah? So we are feeling just stressed all the time, and our environment will continue a feedback loop of stressful information. And so it seems like there's no way out.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a way out using the polyvagal theory and using the vagus nerve. And I can go into that a little bit.
Yeah, let's get into it because
we're
going to be taking calls. And,
you
know, how do you use music in your life? What sounds are soothing and nurturing to you? I mean, I think what you're talking about is unconscious, right? This happens unconsciously.
It
People
happens
don't willfully distort the sounds in their environment, but they receive them a certain way if they're under tension and high stress.
Yes.
So we want to find treatments. We want to find ways that people can soothe themselves.
Yeah.
Right? To write this
absolutely.
Imbalance.
Right. And one way that I discovered that I was really excited about and why my work has sort of added this aspect is that Stephen Porges, who's kind of the father of polyvagal theory, which is that there's actually two branches to the vagus nerve. That's why it's called polyvagal. It means two branches. I'll just backtrack a second. There's the rest and digest and the sympathetic fight and flight. The rest and digest portion is the one that's getting the poly, that's the vagus nerve, and it's got two branches.
Mm-hmm. And where is it located?
It's located along, it starts in the brainstem.
Okay.
And it goes down the back of the body, and then the vagus nerve innervates all of the organs of the body.
So it doesn't really go to the brain so much?
It goes into the facial, the facial muscles, that's the ventral vagal, the social engagement system goes into all the facial muscles, the ears, all the sensory organs mm-hmm. are innervated by the vagus nerve.
Okay.
And it's a cranial nerve. And the responses from the nervous system are learned, and how that goes into the brain is, you know, based on a lot of neurophysiological stuff.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll sort of stay away from brain involvement because that involves, the amygdala and the thalamus and all these things. And that's different responses.
Okay.
But the social engagement portion of the vagus nerve is really what we're talking about here. And it's a way out of this hyper fight and flight sort of response of stress mm-hmm. and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
If you can socially engage someone, you can start to bring them down because social engagement means safety. You can be playful with them. You can talk in a prosodic voice, kind of like I'm talking today.
Right.
And this is a very good technique for therapists to know.
Yeah.
And so, With the polyvagal theory, we have a way to also turn down this sympathetic nervous system firing via the middle ear and the middle ear muscles.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think the potential for psychology and psychotherapists is phenomenal, and psychiatry in general. And that's why Stephen Porges is getting so much press now.
Yeah.
How do you spell his name?
P-O-R-G-E-S.
Yeah, so he's getting so much press, so mm-hmm. much media attention.
Yeah.
And so the potential for psychiatry in general, psychology and treatment in general, I think is huge.
Yeah.
Is huge.
A lot
How do you know when it's compromised or it's out of balance? Is there any measurements? Is there any way to
sort of the social engagement system?
Well, that we know, right? Even therapists now can tell when somebody is social phobic or just not engaged socially, is withdrawn, is isolated. Those are obvious. But I'm wondering just by looking at the vagus nerve, maybe the science isn't there yet.
Well, it just shows up in the face. I mean, it's like, do they have movement of the face? Do they have vocal prosody? Do they smile easily? Do they, are they able to sort of sense, you know, whether somebody's safe or not? You know, is everybody dangerous?
Okay. Yeah. So even their ability to,
they can have that flat affect of depression.
Right.
You know, you learn these things and it's like, that's classic. So the social engagement part of their nervous system is off and they are just in the fight or flight, like, you know, or even freeze, which is the other layer of the vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I'm tempted to ask Haley in her research, Haley, mm-hmm. have you found anything about the repair or knowing when the vagus nerve is compromised or when it's out of balance? You know, how does it show up in psychology? What about certain diseases are because of the vagal nerve? What can you say about that?
This morning, I did a lot of research on a condition that is called misophonia. Mm-hmm. And this is really kind of groundbreaking, newly coined term, not yet in any official book of psychiatry.
But it's coming.
It's coming. It is coming. And so this guy, Schroeder, took this diagnostic scale developed by Yale, and he made a new diagnostic scale for sound sensitivity and how we can diagnose, do you have misophonia, do you have PTSD, and what are the differences in how you react to sound across these different conditions.
Right, because one thing we know, if you have PTSD, you are highly, highly reactive and highly, highly sensitive to sound.
Yes.
That, you know, the classic is the veteran coming back from war and then the door slams mm-hmm. and then they jump. That's, you know, the reflex.
Yes. And that reaction to sound is different than I'm irritated that this person is chewing loudly next to my ear. Mm-hmm. And so they said this is different than PTSD. We need to label this differently, and not all sensitivity to sound is the same. Wow. And it's not all being processed the same. So that's why they are arguing that this misophonia needs to be classified separately from other sound conditions like PTSD. And they're arguing that it is different and they need a new diagnostic set of tools. They need new treatment tools. And this misophonia that we're talking about is that hatred of sounds like chewing, phone, typing, lip smacking, sounds like that.
They're, we could take 100 calls
right.
and everybody call in with their own pet sound that's really, really irritating.
Yeah, I'm curious.
But chewing
about
gum,
that.
You know, if somebody chewing, I think, you know, yes, yeah. that really is definitely one. Of course, scratching your fingers across a chalkboard, those are classic
right,
ones.
Right.
Guitars out of tune, you know, I wonder,
yeah.
but, you know.
So you're back to your.
So that's misophonia.
Right, that's misophonia.
Okay.
And, you know, it's probably going to be hard for people to sort of separate out what's misophonia and what's an intolerance to sounds. Because mm-hmm. that intolerance to sounds might be more linked to the PTSD example that you gave earlier, but misophonia is a whole other reactive sort of scale, and it doesn't seem to be linked directly to any traumatic or stressful event.
But I'm tempted right? to get mm-hmm. some callers just to call us and tell us what they're, you know, what sounds you are allergic
what sounds
to.
Are, yeah, I mean, sound just really gets under your
212-757-5555, 212-757-5555. We're going to have fun the next 2 days. Last week was mm-hmm. serious. We were talking about school shootings, mass murderers, and that the like. We're talking now mm-hmm. about polyvagal theory, Stephen Porges, the inner ear, and how sound can affect your mental health, and mm-hmm. really as a gauge, as a way to gauge your anxiety level. Because I know for myself there are times when I'm more misophonic. I know, or just more sensitive to sound than others and more irritated to certain sounds at different periods, different times. And mm-hmm. obviously and definitely they're related, A, to my stress level, B, how much sleep I've had, you know, C, you know, whether my system is functioning really, really well or not. Ben, how about you? Do you have any kind of sounds that really irritate you? And B, are you certainly sensitive more to bad sounds at different periods?
I don't know. I've become pretty hardened to a lot of these sounds. I mean, personally, I live right near the 7 train,
right.
so you know, and I'm maybe a half a block from the train, and it's one of the most frequent trains. You know, it comes every 2 minutes during rush hour.
Right.
Wow.
So I mean, I don't even hear it anymore.
Right. You I know, wonder if, like, I have,
isn't that, like, but that would be an impossible situation for somebody with misophonia or, mm-hmm. like, you know, and, like, our system will naturally, you'll sort of put that sound into the background. Just naturally, it's just what you need to do.
Except there are times probably when it really interferes and interrupts in an obnoxious way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have a construction site right across the street from my house, too.
A real New Yorker.
They're out there every morning. They're out there every morning at 6:30.
Yeah.
You know, they're not supposed to be, but they are. And when they first started, it really bothered me. It would have me, I'd be up, you know, no matter what.
Yeah.
And now I can actually sleep through the beginning of it, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any particular sounds besides from your living environment that really throw you off, like chewing gum, somebody doing that next to me, it really does something to me.
I don't like any kind of high-pitched hiss or whine from technology.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
S sounds are particularly triggering for a few people.
Absolutely.
With people in
there's a good one.
S sounds.
S sounds, for sure.
I don't like the clipping of nails.
I was going
like
to say,
a high pitch.
Yeah.
I can clip my own nails, but somebody else clipping their nails.
Right, so define misophonia again, Haley.
Generally, it's referred to as a hatred of sounds.
Particular sounds.
Particular sounds that are specifically, I find this very interesting, directly related to the behavior of other people. And so not like a sound like water dripping, maybe not, even though it is repetitive, but somebody clicking their pen, somebody clicking their teeth, somebody doing something.
Interesting.
And it triggers, and some people, it's only with certain people, like their family or their coworkers.
Right.
One person, I was reading a case study, is particularly triggered by her mother chewing, but not her brother. And some a certain family, yes, it's very specific. Some people feel more sensitive to sounds when they're at school or work than when they're at home or in a public space.
Oh, right.
And so there's a lot of variance, which is interesting.
See, I think everybody can identify to just that thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's take a quick call.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we have Marta on the line. Hi, Marta. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Marta. Welcome back, Marta, after the fun drive.
Woo! Okay, well, I'm a donator, so.
Great.
Thank
but, okay, so I can judge the amount of anxiety I am having by the way sounds affect me.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a chronic anxiety, and and it becomes acute if I'm not completely balanced. And it became acute like a month. It's been, I'm just coming out. I'm just going into the woods, I should say. I'm feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, if I would wake up in the morning and if any little thing would bother me, I'm like, oh God, I'm just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would just be like, everything would just
is it the morning? Are mornings more difficult? Or I would think for anxiety, it would be later in the day when the anxiety level raises as the day goes along. Whereas in depression, I know very depressed people can often be very allergic to sound early in mm-hmm. the day because the depression can weigh heaviest in the mornings.
Oh, hmm.
Yeah, so I'm just curious about your experience.
Mine, it just, with anxiety, I feel like it just varies, and, it can be, in the morning I could wake up and just feel terrible and just, you know, just super anxious, and then it can be really good by the time it's 4 o'clock or something.
Beautiful.
So it just so varied, but I mean, I love music and, bird sounds and sounds of nature.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, and but even when I'm in the high anxiety, nothing
works.
Okay,
I get it.
Here we go.
I am curious. In your environment, is there a tone? Is there a refrigerator that runs? Is there something that you? What is it? Do you have a sense of what you're hearing in the morning?
Well, we do have a really loud refrigerator. I live in Brooklyn, so okay. I'm hearing sirens and people yelling on the street.
Okay.
So it's
interesting because then, you know, when you leave your house and you go about your day and at about 4 o'clock, you say you start to feel better?
Yeah.
And you're in an office during that time?
No, I live a very, very tranquil, artistic, creative life.
So yeah. are you working at home?
I work at home, yes.
You do? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I wonder,
I exercise at night, so I go to my pool and so like around 6 o'clock, I know that that's going to happen, and that just is like, oh, you know, great.
So I have one more question. Do you feel like your anxiety is less when you go outside away from your apartment?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay. I'm just, you might try if there's one time, either like turning off your fridge for like half an hour and notice if you feel less anxiety, because the low tone of a refrigerator or an AC or something like that can really whack out your inner ear. If you're toning, just try it. Try like for half an hour. Just unplug your fridge.
It won't destroy the food.
And sit in your it'll be okay for the food.
It's so loud.
There you go.
That
try that.
Could be
in my workshop. It's in my workshop.
It really could be making things worse.
All right, Martha. Listen to the rest of the show. Thanks for donating to WBAI.
Bye.
Great.
Bye. And that's interesting. You know, a lot of us have these small apartments, and the refrigerator you can hear from your bed.
The fridge, the AC, you could have, like, You could have, you know, in your office building, those huge those AC units in an office building can create like a low rumble, a low tone mm-hmm. that you're not really even aware of.
Sure.
And so a lot of people can experience that if they're like walking into some of these buildings in the city and suddenly, you know, like after being there for 10, 15 minutes, they get very anxious.
212.
Could be because of that.
How's that for an S sound?
I know.
7574455552.
It could be from that environment.
7575555. That's subtle. You see, there it is. We're such fine-tuned creatures, you know, human
it's
beings.
Incredible.
You know, when we think about the whales in the ocean, like they can send out a sound that can go across an ocean or you know, like, what is it, the penguins or something, like in a sea of 1,000 penguins, like mm-hmm. the mother can find the child.
Yes.
Just based on the simple sound of the child.
And it's very mammalian. I mean, you're bringing up mammals.
Right.
Reptiles don't hear this way. They either, you know, they sense in a very different way. But mammals have this capacity to hear with their middle ears or with their bodies, and it's like a different kind of neuroception. And mammals were most likely, you know, there to be, you know, eaten or need to fight or flight or need to socialize.
Yeah, right.
The social aspect of mammals as opposed to egg layers, which don't need to stay social and raise their kids. You know,
the
those
what
are
layers?
The egg layers, the reptiles
lay eggs
and leave them, whereas mammals need to be able to, you know, be in groups, raise their young.
Right.
Yeah, it's selection theory.
Be able to say, you know, whether you're safe or you're dangerous.
Okay.
You know, it's all linked. It's so interesting, sort of the evolutionary aspect of this. And what's misinterpreted by us is that, you know, I'm chronically anxious. Well, you know, it's like maybe you have it for another reason, but if you're in an environment that's also, you know, making your middle ear, you know, feel mm-hmm. that there's danger in the environment, it's going to make that anxiety even worse.
212-757-5555. Is your ear tuned to the sound of your refrigerator? Or tuned to something else? I could see like you could be fixated on negative sounds. And this gets back to your beginning of the show where you talked about if your system is in override, that you become kind of prone to listening to the negative sounds.
Yeah.
That your inner ear is tuned to the negative sound. So you don't know what it's like to have equilibrium. So maybe turning off
or
that
safety.
Refrigerator.
Yeah. And just notice if, you know, every time you talk to people who you think are your friends or if, you know, on one day you hear something, you know, from someone and it's just everyone keeps striking you as being really negative. Like you just keep hearing really negative things.
Mm-hmm.
It just might be that you're just mishearing them.
Mm.
And if it seems to happen a lot and you have a lot of social anxiety, you might consider working with tuning your middle ear.
How do you do that? Let's do that after the break. Talk more about social engagement theory.
Yeah.
And more about the off balance, the imbalance of the inner ear with mental health.
Let's take a quick call
before the break.
Yeah, Marco's on the line. Hi, Marco.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Marco.
Fascinating show. And
Thank you. I must say,
this is the first time I call since the sorely missed Armand is no longer
here. Oh, welcome back. Nice
well,
to have
thank
you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, the topic is absolutely fascinating because I think my the woman in my life and the love of my life has that condition, and this is not the regular spate, you know, between man and woman. Quite the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is completely insensitive to hearing the way that I am. For example, you know, I hate to tell you.
You have a very soothing voice.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell her I said so.
Our relationship progresses, you know.
Okay. Wonderful.
It's one of the reasons why. But, you know, I don't always listen to WBAI, and there are other... So to say,
lousy stations out there.
Yes, that sometimes have endorsement grants, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of
and
course.
That annoys me so greatly.
Yeah.
I have to shut it off immediately. And she doesn't even hear them. She says it doesn't bother her.
Oh, interesting.
But on the other hand, sometimes I say things that she takes exactly how you described, in as if I meant them in a passive-aggressive way.
Right.
And she also has a very difficult work environment with a very high responsibility job, and I counsel her constantly. And from, I mean, there is some hostility, but from the way she tells me things, I wonder if also she hears things at work that aren't meant in a hostile manner. Because, yeah, no, it's really, that's why you're really doing a great, great program.
Thank you. You could check your environment, your apartment, whatever. Is there any sounds that might be bothering her in her ear there besides your voice, you know? Or, you know, are there any sounds that might be soothing for her? Diane, you have something to say.
Yeah, there's, just the fact that she's in a high stress environment.
Yes.
What you might, I don't know if, does she like listening to music?
Oh, yes, but it, you know, there we have, well, some things we like, and interestingly, we started a list of things, not only music, that we both liked, because some things we don't like, and
right.
For example, she has, I forget what's the name of the band that is. You know,
well, I would sort of suggest that you try to find some melodic sort of middle tone things. We're gonna play like some Simon and Garfunkel's like good,
yes.
Like that kind of melodic music. And if when she comes home, if you can like have a little ritual around listening to some music, maybe singing together, maybe playing a little bit.
It's funny because she started this thing that every day when we wake up, you know, there is a phrase, the other day was sunshine, and we had to find songs around that use
great.
The word sunshine.
Great. So that kind of sort of play, and do it after her day of work, because that's when she's really stressed out, and before you can really say anything to her. It might be just a nice little intervention in the middle, sort of tune her down.
We're about to go to our break. But Marco, tell her, I'm going to say what Armand used to say, tell her to listen to today's show. And also to tune into tomorrow. Tomorrow we're talking about a concept called a sound bath tomorrow. So it sounds like she needs a nice long dip in a sound bath.
Yeah, but again, you know, she's very refractory to... you know, listening at certain times. Also, she can't do that at work, but I will try to turn it on to the archives. I've tried in the past, but, you know, she has to listen to what she wants to listen to.
Okay, my friend. Well, I think your voice is great. Just say you're listening WBAI in New York. Bye-bye.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone. Narrow streets of cobblestone, 'neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light, it split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one dared sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silence. of silence, and the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls, whispered in the sounds of silence.
Simon and Garfunkel, Sounds of Silence, here on this spring day. Yes, as of about an hour and a half ago, it is springtime in New York.
Oh, my gosh.
If you can believe that.
That's right.
I'm ready.
The sounds of spring are coming.
I'm ready for it. I don't know about you.
Except not yet, right? We have snow coming. So what's the sound of snow falling?
I actually enjoy the sound of snowfall. That is a very relaxing sound to me.
And I think a lot of people like it because it's muffling a lot of the sounds of the city. You know, it's just as a muffling.
Yeah.
An interruption. Absolutely. It sort of disturbs the sound. It's like a becomes like white noise.
So we have a bunch of callers. John is on the line. Are we ready to?
John, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, John.
Hi. I wanted to talk about my experience and.
Sure.
When I was a young boy, my mother and I would march around the table. There was a certain program we would do that march to, but then a song called the Saber Song would come on. And I don't know if you've ever heard it, but it used to drive me crazy. From a little boy, it was very irritating and aggravating.
Mm.
And so as I, now I'm older and I have other sounds that, can annoy me. My wife, we live in a condo. My wife has the TV on all the time, and there's no way I can escape it. So what she has done now, especially when there's programs like where there's a lot of applauding, like the Ellen DeGeneres show.
I think you're right. I think that's one of the on the list of annoying sounds is the sound of an audience applause.
Right.
Applauding and screaming as well.
Yes.
So that usually gets on my nerves. But what we've done is my wife now has headphones, and when I say Elba, I can't take it. On go the headphones. And sometimes when I don't, I want to give her a break from the headphones, I put on like these construction mufflers, the mufflers that mufflers that will cover, block out the sound.
What are they called? Like
what construction workers use. They
The
drill. Yeah. Noise canceling.
I put them on. You can't hear much when you have them on, and I find it very, very. You can really hear yourself thinking, and you can hear your there's a sound that your body makes. You can hear that, and it can bring you to a nice state. But I used to practice yoga as well, so I did a lot of chanting and yoga, and that was very soothing as well. But recently I joined the Orthodox Church in my neighborhood, and I find that the chanting they do there is so healing and nurturing, and it really has filled. I had some bad episode in my life where my family, my brother's very ill, and for a while there, I was driving myself crazy with anxiety, trying to figure out how I could help him and I could be of some service to him.
Yeah.
Even to the point where I went to a doctor and I came out of the office and I went into atrial fibrillation from just hearing the information that he gave me.
Bad news can cause a biological response. So you really went into AFib?
Hmm. Yes, I went into AFib, and then I had to be converted with cardio, the shock.
Right.
But I visited the Orthodox Church shortly after that experience. That how I got there is another matter. I don't want to get into the details.
Sure.
But and I felt so close to the divine.
Mm.
I felt so close to someone there supporting me through the music and the environment. And I just wanted to share that.
John, thank you so much. Tomorrow we're doing sound bath. It sounds like the chanting kind of becomes a bath for you. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but you feel sort of surrounded and enveloped in this beautiful, pleasant sound. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. It's very,
Before you go, just this is send a Valentine to your wife. When is her voice most pleasing to you?
Well, when she says my name.
Wonderful. You can hear how much she loves you when she says your name.
Yes, that's so great. Whether she's annoyed or not, it's still good to hear my name.
That's a great thing. Okay, John, keep listening. Listen tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
That's you know, it reminds me of Dr. Christian Enescu when he was talking about what the Gregorian chants did in terms
You're
of
right.
the brainwaves they produced.
Yeah. Yes.
They produced these kind of alpha brainwaves.
Yeah.
And that he was saying that how that helps people focus more and concentrate more, and it's relaxing.
Yeah. Mm.
And we talked a lot about the effect of sound when we were talking about the binaural beats.
Exactly.
Yes. With Dr. Enescu.
Right.
Yeah,
the hemisync experience where you're synchronizing the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere with this third sound that the music creates and does penetrate in the inner ear. That's a great reminder, Ben, of the hemisync that we do here at the center. So.
Yeah, yeah. And that is like another way to, you know, at least sort of balance the brain chemistry in the brain. And then, you know, doing the work maybe specifically with the middle ear structures to help the nervous system, you know, because they're functioning together and they're also seeing things differently. So, there's a couple of, you know, treatment possibilities.
We have a lot of people calling, but I did want to get to the last bits of information. Is there a pink theory that you're talking about?
There's some treatment possibilities, and there are quite a few people out there that are developing different strategies for helping people tone maybe their middle ear muscles. There's pink noise therapy, which, you know, uses very specific, you know, types of music, and they modulate it in different ways, and this helps the middle ear get tuned and toned to, you know, the human voice.
Pink noise.
And it's funny, we were talking about that color pink because that color pink has many associations.
It really does. You know, they found that in prisons where they're applying pink, the color pink paint, to jail cells, there's a book on this. I mean, it's fascinating that there's actually less violence in the prisons because of the pink walls. It's a before and after effect. They've shown tangibly the effect of pastel pink on the walls in prisons. And I wouldn't doubt that within 5 years, all the prison walls are going to be pink.
One can only hope.
You know,
and pink is typically associated with the feminine. And the human voice, the feminine voice or feminized voice, like if men are, you know, interacting with children, they usually go into a higher pitch, you know, and if they do, then the kids are more, you know, it's like it's that sort
of. So fathers will raise their voice
subconsciously? I think subconsciously.
Yeah, they're not even aware of it.
Because you get a good response. You know,
so we'd love to.
You know, if you go low with a kid, they're suddenly really scared and they'll kind of freeze because they're so incredibly sensitive. So pink noise is one way of doing it. And then I work with something called the Safe and Sound Protocol developed by Stephen Porges. And you listen for 1 hour a day for 5 days in a row. That is if you can tolerate it. And it's music that's like a lot of country. There's some country music. There's some Simon Garfunkel, some Dolly Parton. And it's very specific in its range and its melodic structure. And then they modulate this music, sometimes different in the different ears. It sometimes feels like it's really quiet, sometimes a little bit louder. But it's all to sort of exercise the tiniest muscles in your body that control the tiniest bones in your body. And that's the muscles and bones of the middle ear. And when that gets tuned up, you're able to hear the human voice and to understand its emotional content and its cognitive content better. And it's being used for PTSD. It's also being used for
sound
autism.
Sound and what protocol?
The Safe and Sound Protocol.
Safe and Sound Protocol.
Yeah. We have a lot of callers on
the line. Yeah,
we do. Okay.
I think the real reason they paint the walls pink is to emasculate the men that are in
there. That's a theory.
That's what I think.
That's a psychoanalytic theory. But actually, I don't know. We'll get back to that.
We have a composer on the line, which I think will be exciting to hear from a composer. Hello, Leo. You're there.
Yes. First time caller.
Hey, Leo. Welcome aboard.
Wonderful show. Wonderful show.
Thank you.
Listen, I have a couple of strategies that I deal with sounds that I don't like.
Go ahead.
There's one sound that if someone bangs on my door, Mm-hmm. I have my radio is going on all the time. I just don't answer it. Okay. But usually, when the composing act comes into it, I have like four different radios, four different stations.
Wow.
Sometimes I listen to one, sometimes I listen to two, sometimes I listen to three, and all four. And what I'm developing is like a contrapuntal way of thinking. But most of the time, it's like if I'm listening to news, uh-huh. I have music on the other end, like WC on another radio.
Uh-huh.
So because the news is, you know, a lot of it is dread, uh-huh. right? So something like WC or something like that uh-huh. keeps me aware of what's going on in the world, but keeps me emotionally grounded. So that's my strategy.
Fascinating. You know? You are a composer, aren't you?
Wow.
You're always thinking about the horn section and the string section and different sections that go into making an orchestra. Is that right?
Yes, and not only that, natural sounds, sounds of, yeah. You know, animals, mm. birds, you know. Mm. I mean, I have experience when I was in the jungle one time in South America, and the sounds that you hear in that environment enlarges your sound body. That's
yeah.
what I call it.
Sound body.
You know, whereas the sounds in the city kind of like constrict you and your sound body can become smaller.
Mm. That's a really interesting concept.
Do you use those sounds also separately, individually? That sounds to me like a sound you'd want to hear, you know, not crowded in by the television or anything else.
No. Sometimes if I'm using like natural sounds, I can't be sensitive. Because mm-hmm. I don't want to overpower the sounds of a bird, say, for instance, or whatever.
Right.
Exactly. You know.
And I really appreciate the strategy you came up with. Like, here's bad news. I'm going to put some really nice music underneath it so that I balance myself emotionally and really tune into the reality is am I actually okay, even though the news is bad.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
Yes,
I think that's really a wonderful strategy. How brilliant.
Yes, well, you know, I'm glad to contribute to anybody who wants to try it. You know, it works
yes.
for me.
Yeah, put some nice music on when you're listening to the bad news out there.
Well, first time call, Leah, was fantastic. Keep calling us. Thanks.
Okay,
and listen
yes.
tomorrow. We're talking
yes,
about
sound,
yeah, sound
like
baths
this.
Tomorrow.
I will. Take care, everybody.
Have a good
Thanks,
day.
Leo.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You know, one of the most famous composers out there actually went deaf over the course of his life.
Yes, he yes. did.
Yeah.
Right, and he did his best music, supposedly, after he was deaf.
Yeah, Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Do we have any Beethoven to go out with?
We do. I was going to maybe... I had some music to play, but then I thought maybe we'll play some Debussy in honor of Leo.
Well, and what's interesting, though, is that, you know, people can take hearing tests, but that doesn't mean that their middle ear is toned.
Right. Thank you for that.
There can be a difference, and you brought up this thing about going deaf. It's very different, and I think some people, especially people who suffer with tinnitus, that can be something that can be alleviated a little bit with this safe and sound protocol. Also, people with balance problems.
Well, how about car sickness? People who get car sickness, they're tracking it, obviously, to the inner ear.
Well, that's inner ear, not middle ear.
Oh,
that's
different.
A little bit
okay.
different. They are related, but mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily as effective, at least the stuff that I'm doing.
212-757-5555. It's developed into a very, very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
I love it.
Another treatment strategy for people who have like a particular sound that they're really afraid of, like, or, you know, have kind of the misophonic sort of response, or just it's just a hard sound, like, you know, the sound of a jackhammer outside
yes.
your window
okay.
for construction. A lot of people are experiencing that
uniformly.
One way that we use in somatic experiencing is to imagine a sound that's exactly opposite that. That's the complete polar opposite. So you've got jackhammer sound.
While it's going on?
So, yes, while it's going on, like sort of imagine the sound of your child laughing.
Huh.
As just an opposing, it's just a way to sort of take the anxious, like throwing the logs on the fire, like I hate the sound, it's too much.
Brilliant.
Like,
brilliant idea.
What's an opposite sound? And then how does that sound, when I think of that sound, how does that feel in my body? Mm. And pay attention to that as opposed to paying attention to the jackhammer.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Monique, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks.
Hello, Monique.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a first-time caller, and I really love your show. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I'm a social worker, so it always helps in my line of work to listen to you guys.
Polyvagal theory and the middle ear.
Yeah.
So tell us, what is this doing for you? Are you sensitive to sound? I mean, do you see your clients?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I find that I'm sensitive to certain voices, some of those I guess meditative voices that you might hear on a like a meditative video or something
sure.
like that. They
yeah.
just bother me. It sounds so ironic, but I cannot stand to hear that voice.
I know. Oh, you're not alone in that. I believe, you know, when I hear that. So what do you associate? Because I'll tell you after mm-hmm. you go what I get. But what do you associate mm-hmm. with that?
I don't know what I associate with it so much as I just know that it elicits a level of annoyance in me where I almost feel like I'm shaking inside, and I just don't like it. It's almost an angry response, if anything.
Is the tone of the voice kind of monotone?
Yes,
that's the problem.
Hmm.
And I know a lot of hypnosis or meditation people fall into that trap a little bit hmm. of being like, and now we're going to meditate. You know, it's like that. If they could incorporate more vocal prosody, that mm-hmm. would make it more interesting to your middle ear. If you go with a low tone, like if you talk to a dog in a low tone, he immediately cowers
mm-hmm.
because it says, uh-oh, this person's angry.
Mm-hmm.
And that yeah. might be something, you know, to the meditation teachers out there, watch how you're yeah. how you're leading this meditation.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever.
you don't see high-pitched meditation teachers talking
so
in a very excited, very diachromatic way. They're,
yeah.
they're very monochrome. But
Precise.
For me, Monique, I get the sense of trying to be controlled, that it's often people who use that strategy often use it as a way of controlling you and everybody else. But,
yeah.
you know, so there's this like this smothering softness of the sound that can almost be, you know, in a way to me feels like anything I'm thinking and wanting to say is irrelevant. This person has center stage. They're the one who is controlling
right.
the sounds and the environment. So anyway, that's
yeah.
just my reaction.
Yeah.
Anyway, call us again, Monique.
I will. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks.
Thank
and
you.
Listen tomorrow.
Will do.
Okay, bye-bye. Sound, you know, I mean, I think there's so much potential. I really think it can be used as a diagnostic tool for psychiatry, for me and
Huge.
Other therapists, really as a gauge to both diagnose, you know,
mm-hmm.
your stress level
mm-hmm.
and solutions. Like you say, when
yeah.
you know, we often think like when somebody comes in with anxiety to try and think the opposite or to get to a different thought or to find out what the source of the thought is. I mean, that's analytical, but a quick tool can be
right.
just think the opposite. Just think of something soothing
yeah,
as it's going on.
Completely opposite. And also know that when we experience something that causes an anxiety, our mind will try to make up a story about what that is. And that can come in all different shapes and forms.
Mm-hmm.
And that anxiety, what she said about misophonia being so, what Haley said about misophonia being sometimes so related to other people, there could be some layer of like, you know, what's your relationship with that other person? Is it an anxiety-producing relationship?
Beautiful. Absolutely.
And then boom,
right.
the sound that they make
right.
that's just a little bit out just sets
right.
off that anxiety cascade. And so
yeah.
I think it's going to be a very interesting time
right.
to know this information, learn about misophonia even more, because it's a very new diagnosis, but I think people have been plagued with it for a long time.
Sure.
And I think people have been plagued with also these new sort of sounds of the industrial world for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And the associations they make with it. Because very often if a sound is happening at a time when something bad is happening,
mm-hmm.
at the same time, your mind will link those two. You know, so say you got, you know, sexually assaulted next to a construction site.
Right.
You might always associate construction noises with
sure.
the fear and terror.
Sure.
of. So it's like that's the way the mind will link things together.
Right.
Like what's happening at this time? And that's part of the whole memory thing
mm-hmm.
that we can talk about later.
Mm.
But it's so interesting, and I was so excited when I read Stephen Porges about this protocol
mm-hmm.
and about working with the tiniest muscles in the body, because I'm a massage therapist.
Yes,
I love
are.
Muscles. And I'm like, oh, my God, I get to work with the tiniest muscles in the body.
Yeah.
And we work them out like we work out muscles in our workout.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're toned and when they're able to respond, it just makes life so much better for a lot of people.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think there's great, great potential.
Mm-hmm.
And the tiniest bone in your body is on the deep, is in the middle ear.
Yeah.
And that can determine
so much.
Your balance and your
how
peace.
You feel. Yeah,
yeah,
how you feel on a day to day.
Yeah.
I just
Go ahead.
If I can throw in one last thing, it works really well with low tone autism.
Oh, I was going to say, what do you mean?
If you're a low tone autist, it means the tone in your muscles in your whole body are lower than normal. And if that's true of the middle ear, autistic children have trouble determining the emotional and cognitive content of vocal speech. And I'm working with a young man right now with a safe and sound protocol.
Is that right?
We'll let you know
what
how it
about
goes.
People with Alzheimer's? Because, you know, they that's are particularly, they're very, you can tell, like, onset that's of Alzheimer's, one of the signals
that's something
is
they want to study.
A hypersensitivity to sound.
Yeah.
And then also smell. They say as you, you know, yeah. as you progress into Alzheimer's that your sense of smell disappears. Mm-hmm. So yeah. anyway, fascinating stuff going forward.
So much.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you, Nassima Diane Deamer, for being here
thank
today.
You for
this
having
is a fascinating
me.
Topic.
Thank
sit
you,
in
Haley.
Tomorrow.
She had to run off.
Sit
but
in
yeah.
tomorrow with us.
I will definitely be
with
here
the sound bath.
Thank you, Nassima.
Yes.
And thank you to
great
all
music.
Of our callers today. Thanks for calling in and being a part of the show. And to all of our listeners and to everyone who contributed during the past fun drive. We can't do it without you. We love you guys. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, 1 p.m. right here, 99.5 FM, WBAI. Take care.